everybody. Today I want to talk to you about PDA, and specifically it's about the PDA meltdowns. This isn't really a podcast discussion, but I am putting it into the podcast series because it is visiting some of the information that I've shared on my page. Now, as you know, this is Proudly Neurodivergent. This is a page that we've been trying to establish, but it's actually a sister page to our main page, which is Our Neurodivergent Life, at NDivergent Life. Regarding the name, the one I really wanted was already taken, and we feel that this is quite appropriate because of the fact that we are an entirely autistic or neurodivergent family. So the thing I wanted to talk about was PDA. I feel that tantrums do not adequately describe what happens with PDA children. I think we've said for a long time, there is a difference between a tantrum and a meltdown. And a tantrum can normally be resolved by definition if you give the child what it is they want. And then if that ends the tantrum, then that's a tantrum. There's a purpose behind it. If I'm honest, I always say this, don't I? I don't believe anything is binary. And I even think for neurotypical children that it isn't always a tantrum. I think that we forget children are people with feelings and it's complex. And actually, I don't think it's really fair to just say that only neurodivergent children and adults as well experience this. I think that across the board, we all have fluctuations in our hormones and our emotional capacity and all of those things. So I think everybody can be equally affected by things, but I do appreciate that obviously in our neurodivergent world, we do have a lot of different triggers. So the sensory ones, for example, sensory meltdowns, sensory overloads, shutdowns. I think that this is a much bigger problem in our community. But again, this is kind of trying to give some understanding to it, but this isn't the main discussion. The main discussion is about the PDA meltdowns. I believe that my children have escalations, which is the bit where they get anxious or they get quite worked up or triggered about something and they wobble. And this escalation can kind of be like a mild meltdown, but obviously it's not to the extreme where they've completely lost it and you can't communicate and you can't do anything. At this point, it can sometimes be managed. But if I'm truthful, even at this stage, if you do manage to simmer this down, I've used this analogy before and I'll use it again. But when I was teaching, I used to say that I used to have really challenging behaviour. And it was like whack-a-mole, the game where you have to hit the mole or the creature. And as one goes down, another one or two come up. That was what teaching was like for me. And it was quite funny. So you had to always be on the go, walking around the classroom and dealing with behaviour. Some low level and some a lot more challenging. My children, to me, are the same. And I still feel like I'm playing this game of perpetual whack-a-mole with the two of them. But sometimes with my youngest in particular, I feel that he is worthy of the whack-a-mole game as an individual because I literally have to keep on top of his simmering all day. From the moment he wakes up, his anxiety is high. And obviously from one day to the next, this can change. But generally speaking, he is a very anxious child and it upsets me sometimes because you can't help but sometimes, especially when other people have things to say, you know, wonder why. But I realise it's in his makeup and there's nothing I've physically done. I mean, I couldn't be more nurturing. What's really tough as a parent is I think you get people who blame you because they'll make assumptions about the fact that you haven't been very nurturing. I had somebody recently ask if, oh, do you think he's like this because you do this? Assuming I get angry and I'm unkind or something and it's just not my style whatsoever. So that was offensive. But then by the same token, as you will know from previous discussions, you then get the people saying, well, they're only like it because you pander. And actually, I really don't. I feel I'm quite balanced. I'm firm but fair. That's how I was as a teacher. And I think it's how I am as a parent. However, as a parent, obviously, it's different. You're with these children 24/7. And it's a different experience. In school, you have the peer element, which you don't have at home. And at school, you do have children who mask, which you don't have at home. So it is a totally different experience. And I appreciate now more than ever that I would see a very different representation of a child in the school setting than a parent would at home. I got it then, but my word, like now, the complete difference to me is even overwhelming, and I wish I could go back and speak to some of those parents. I really do. But again, I digress. So we have these escalations and they can maybe be managed, like the whack-a-mole thing, or they can escalate into a full meltdown. But even if you manage to de-escalate to some degree, it's always there bubbling under the surface. Like nothing completely regulates your child. And you have to almost walk on eggshells. I don't like to use that term because it sounds like, I don't know, again, like the pandering kind of idea. But you kind of are. You're having to think ahead all of the time. And it's quite draining and people don't realise. Well, it's my opinion that there's something different to a meltdown and different to an escalation. And I don't know if it already exists out there, if there's already a term for it. But personally, there's something else that my child experiences. And both of my children meet the criteria of PDA. But my youngest is much more kind of textbook, I suppose. So to most people, he can mask. He's very charming. He can make eye contact. He's very intelligent. Lovely child. They both are. but he's such a lovely boy. And people say, oh, he's so confident. But then you have this other side where he really struggles. And he's anxious and he worries. And he's insecure and he feels unsafe. And people don't see this. And unless you actually experience the thing I'm trying to describe, that I don't really want to call a meltdown because I don't really feel that it's in that vein. And the reason I don't think it kind of comes under that category completely is because there is an element of control. So today I don't know what, we need to probably give this a name. So I'm going to call it, it's not even a panic attack. I don't know what to call it. Let's just call it a panic attack for now, okay? So when he has this panic attack, it's like, sometimes it feels like he's setting you up to fail, which obviously is not what's happening in his conscious mind whatsoever. But it feels as though he waits for you to do something so that he can get annoyed. And again, I know that's not what it is, but the example I'll give you today, I said, would you like to help me put some washing out? Because I suffer with POTS. And that means that some days I have really erratic heart rate, especially if you're moving position. And this morning I was having a really bad time. I'd had high blood pressure yesterday, really awful pressure in my head. And then today my heart at this stage hadn't gone lower than 128. And I think the top was about 141. And this was from literally just, you know, getting out of bed and moving around gently, making breakfast. And I wasn't feeling great, but I needed to get this washing outside. And the reason it was imperative is because my youngest is having bladder issues, which is another topic. And he's wetting himself about 4 to 6 times a day at the moment. And he doesn't want to wear a nappy, and I don't blame him. But as a result, obviously, I have a lot of washing that I have to get through, and he's running out of items to wear. So it's really imperative. It's not something that can be negotiated. It needed to be done. And there was only me to do it. So I mentioned this to the boys and I said, you know, mummy really does need some help. And I know that's not great for PDA children either. But I just said I'd be really grateful if someone would help me. And initially he wanted to help. But then he got distracted by a game, Lego Mario, and said, oh, mummy, I just want to play Lego Mario. You do it. I said, yeah, that's fine. I said, I'm going to ask your brother to help me because I do need some help, really. Mummy's struggling because of my heart being high and I feel a bit dizzy. And specifically what I needed them to do was to just pass the items to me so I didn't have to keep bending down. And again, some people can criticize me and say, well, you shouldn't be putting this demand on your children. But actually, it's really tricky when there are days like today where I'm not very well. That can't be controlled. I have a chronic illness. It's not my fault. And sadly, my children obviously are not great with demands, but as it happens, my eldest said, oh, mummy, I will help you. The other reason was I cannot go into the garden and leave both of the children together because they're really dangerous and they will do things like push the other one down the stairs, you know, and it's not to be unkind, but they get a bit carried away with themselves and they'll do silly things like they're giggling, they're having fun, they're not doing it to be aggressive, but one will push the other one into the TV unit or into a wall, or they just get carried away and overexcited. I'm explaining this bit really terribly, but essentially, I was really happy my eldest came to help me because I could not have gone outside and left my youngest playing. Now, I could see him through the window, but it's still not safe. I cannot leave them for any time. And I think a lot of parents don't understand this. When you say I can't trust them, they're oblivious to danger. They just don't understand. And they think I'm being fussy. And they don't understand that actually I'd give nothing. I'd love nothing more than to be able to give them that trust and that independence. And for me to be able to go and have a few moments away, but I am constantly on. And then people criticise you for whinging about the burden of your children. And that's also not what I'm saying. And this is another discussion that I could easily go off into. In parent shaming, in kind of attacking parents who are raising children who are not typical. And we have a really tough experience, but it's not about our kids, is it? We love our children. We'll make any accommodations to make them happy and safe. But I don't understand why this has to be at the expense of acknowledging the parents' struggle with admin, with other people, let alone what is happening in the home environment. You know, I've been very close to recently, if I'm honest, an emotional breakdown, and it's from other people, and that lack of support and the lack of understanding and the judgment and the comments. And I'm really struggling, and I'm a strong person. But we're 4.5 years into, you know, the pathway of diagnosis and all of those things, and it's a struggle. Anyway, I was outside with my eldest. We were hanging the washing. We'd finished the entire line of washing, and my youngest appears at the window and completely loses it. And there was no transition, you know, from, oh, mummy, I wanted to help you. Nothing like that. This isn't how he works. Okay, so he knew I was outside. He'd already been offered to help. He knew his brother was coming to help me. He knew I needed the support because of my illness. Everything was very explained because I have to do that daily. Because if you don't prepare the children and explain everything to them, even if sometimes they don't fully have the concept, you still have to do these things with them because they don't cope. People scoff at that too, but my children do not cope unless you give them all this input. And so again, when people say, oh, you're just fussing, it's draining. Not whinging, just a fact. But obviously he saw my son and myself finishing the washing, putting it all up on the line, and he wasn't happy about this and went straight from 0 to 100. And he was hitting the window, and then he got an object and was hitting the window and was screaming. And then he went non-verbal and was just kind of outstretching his hand and making this really loud noise. And I said, would you like to come and help us? Because you can hang a few items. I mean, I think had a few socks left, but I was happy to take a few items down so that he could actually hang them, because I'm all for negotiating and, again, trying to simmer down. I don't want him to feel rejected. I don't want him to feel negative or upset or hurt. And some people think that's pandering. But you can't win in this case, because people will always criticize anything you do. But I know my children, and I know that in most cases, this would probably help him. So he would feel, okay, now I'm being included. Yes, he was given the option, but that's not the point. He, at this point, has now changed his mind and he wants to be involved. And he sees there's no opportunity to be involved because he has come into the situation at the very end saying, I want to help. And obviously there was nothing left really to do. So I said, look, I don't mind. Let's take a few items off and you can repeg them. But this wasn't what he wanted. He wanted the entire line of 30 to 40 items removed so that he could hang them all again with me. And I do think this was probably some issue with the fact that his brother had helped me complete it. He was aware his brother had helped me, but he seemed fine all the way through the process until the very end. And this is where, I mean, sometimes it feels as though it's like on purpose. It's not. But it feels like it sometimes, because you think, you know, you had the opportunity and you've waited until now. But it's not a conscious thing. He's not thinking, right, I'm going to wait until she gets that last item hung and then I'm going to kick off. I know that that's not the case, but it is how it appears, and it is how it appears to other people. And that's often what people will say, that he's playing a game and he's manipulating me and trying to control me. I get that to some degree he is trying to control, But I don't think it's me per se. He has got obviously these big feelings and anxieties and rejections and all these negative emotions. And he's overwhelmed, he's overcome. And for some reason, that's escalated him, that's triggered him. I understand that. I don't think for a moment it's conscious. It's just that sadly it happened at that point. It's just because it regularly happens that people think, no, he's definitely doing this on purpose. But, you know, I see how he gets, and there is no way any individual, a child or an adult, would want to put themselves through the torture and the torment that comes afterwards with, you know, the physical and the emotional things that happen to his body. There's no way that I believe in, on any level there is a intention behind it, or that there's a motive, or that he's done this on purpose. Absolutely not. But obviously, he fixated on what he wanted, and that was to do the entire line of washing. And I refused to take the entire line of washing off, partly because my heart was still high. Again, hadn't gone lower than 128 at this stage. I was dizzy. It was too much for me. But do you know what? I'm not even going to use that as an excuse. Let's push that to one side. And let's say that my chronic illness was not an issue at this point in time. It was unreasonable to expect me to remove 30 to 40 items of washing that I needed desperately to dry so he could wear pants and trousers. I explained this to him, but he wasn't in a space to receive it, obviously. And I always say, there's no point talking to him when he's in this state of mind, but sometimes you can't help yourself because you feel like, you know, something will get through. But this is where he is different. And it's different to a meltdown, of what I would describe as a meltdown. So in a meltdown, nothing you say or do is going in, and it's pointless. There's just no point. It's futile. Whereas when he's in this state, this panic attack state, he does take stuff in. He's able to process information on some level and respond to it. He's still completely overcome by emotion. He's still so very out of control. And again, this is what people debate. Well, no, he can't be, but he is. It's still all those things that you see in a meltdown. But for example, when he was smashing the window with a shoe, I said very calmly, you need to be careful, because if you keep smashing that window, it is going to crack. It will smash. There'll be pieces of glass everywhere. They're very sharp and they're dangerous. And I don't want you to get hurt or anybody else. So please be careful. I know some people think that's too soft and that I should have laid down the law. But again, I have a PDA child and it's just not effective. And I don't think it's always the go-to response anyway, but that's, you know, not for here, really. But the interesting thing was he actually stopped hitting the window. He then found something else to hit with the shoe. So he still like had to kind of expel this energy and he had to follow this through, but he didn't do it on the window anymore. And that to me is where there's something else going on here. There's something else. It's not quite a meltdown, although it mirrors it. And it's worse than an escalation. It's like there's something in the middle of those two things, I suppose. And I'm not really sure. I can't put my finger on it. But, you know, it's led from all the same drives and has very similar behaviour. But there is a level of consciousness in what he's doing. But he then became really nonverbal. And I said, look, let me help you put your shoes on. Let's go outside and we will hang some of the washing up. And he gave me a hug, still crying. So I thought, okay, we're getting somewhere. We're making some progress. I took him outside and he proceeded to have the most massive meltdown. He was pulling washing off the line and it transpired that he didn't want me to unpeg washing for him to peg. He wanted to literally pull each item, rip it from the pegs onto the grass, and then we had to rehang it from, you know, one end to the other end of the line. And we had to do it in this particular way because that's what he, you know, that was the control he wanted. But obviously, where I'm good at negotiating and compromising and collaborating, this was a non-negotiable because that is not appropriate. I'm not going to have my clothes ripped off of the line where they can get damaged and then covered in grass and dirt so that it negates the whole point of them being washed and hung. And also, he broke several pegs in the process. And I can't allow that to happen. So again, I reiterated that I was more than happy for him to hang some of the washing, not the whole 30 to 40 items. Some people have berated me for that, saying, what's the harm? And like I said, actually, from a health perspective, I was struggling. So that wasn't something I could do. not physically. But moving that aside, I still don't think that's healthy either. As much as I compromise and negotiate to remove 30 to 40 items of washing that desperately needed to be dried and that were already on the line, it just seems a little bit too extreme. Now, again, you might think I'm wrong. You might have been happy to do that. Maybe if my head wasn't spinning, I might have been as well. But if I'm really truthful, I don't think that was the right approach. I think negotiating that we could hang even half the line of washing or something properly would have been adequate. But some people will disagree. And I think that's just the way it is. But I know him and I know what he normally responds to. And normally that would work for him. But in this space, he wouldn't. And I do think it was more about the fact his brother had helped me do it. I really do. I think all of a sudden he just, not jealous, but I think he had some kind of emotion related to that and rejection. He constantly needs reassurance and validation. And that hurts me sometimes because I couldn't be more loving. And I feel, validating. I'm not really sure what the word is as usual in the moment. I'll think of so many later. Sometimes that hurts because I really do love him and adore him. And I am very open with expressing that in physical, you know, and verbal ways. But something obviously did trigger him. And no matter whether people understand it or not, that feeling cannot be invalidated or negated. And I try so hard to support him through all of these things, but at some point it takes its toll. And at this point I said, no, I'm sorry. At this stage he'd been hitting me, pulling the washing off the line, and it just wasn't, it had gone too far. And somebody on one of the social media accounts actually said, I'm sorry, but you are actually responsible. Like, you caused this distress. And what they don't realise is I didn't cause the distress. As always, I negotiated, I gave him options and opportunities, and normally he responds to it. But obviously, for some reason, he was very heightened and wasn't responding to that. I still feel that I did the right thing. It's this comment has really bothered me because I think it's not really the individual, because actually I think the problem I'm having is I struggle to describe the situation correctly and properly and how intense it is and how frequent it is. I think I wrote on my social media post that this happens every day without fail about something, and it could be anything. Which I've told you before, he might not like my socks, or that I've smiled at something on my phone because he perceives it as laughing at him. You're just a very insecure child, and it's sad. It's very sad. But yeah, I just don't really know what else I can do in some of these situations, but it's, people are very quick to bash you as a parent. One thing I did say was that please don't comment unless you are a parent of a PDAer, because I do feel that this aspect is probably specific to PDA because of the high anxiety. And that is certainly him. And people say about the Jekyll and Hyde effect. Well, he is Jekyll and Hyde. He's 0 or 100. There's no in between. I want so badly for him to learn how to regulate and to be happy and to be secure. And I know I've still got so much work to do to help him get there. But I am a human being as well. And I just think, why are we not acknowledging that, you know, parents are people? And although our children always, always, always come first, my children come first, they come above me, always and forever. But actually, I'm at a place where I'm not functioning too well. And it's partly because of the daily demand of the children, but it's not actually them specifically. I always say this. The problem is they are challenging. That's a fact. We have these things every day over something. But it's other people's response. It's other people's lack of support, lack of thought, comments, dismissing the children's challenges because they might see them in a good moment. And dismissing my challenges. And do you know what? Other than literally a couple of members of my family, and there's a lot of people kind of around us in the background, but apart from a couple of members of my family, nobody offers, nobody texts us or contacts us to find out how we are. Nobody offers to help in any way, because to me, it feels as though they only want to support you if it's on their terms. So, for example, somebody might say, can I take them out or have them at my house? And because my children are at a place at the moment where that's not a possibility, we are seen as withholding or being difficult or awkward and not letting people in. And actually, that's not the case at all. Like, I have one family member who has asked to take the children out, and this, oh, every part of me wants to say yes, but I know this family member doesn't really understand the children. And I've seen enough in person that when they do get a bit heightened or escalated, that they're escalated further by this individual because they just don't handle things in the right way. They're handling things how they think it should be handled. And it's almost as though sometimes they do it thinking they're going to get this wonderful result and prove us wrong. But actually, every single time they've tried it, it's made things so much worse. So because of that, I can't really trust other people with them either. And I get how people then feel rejected. I feel that maybe they feel judged. But the thing is, I just can't stand the ego. There's so much ego. People get really offended and make it about themselves. And it isn't about us and it isn't about them. It's about the children and what's good for them. We've put them in the past in so many positions and situations to appease other people, and I'm not doing it anymore. They're getting more and more complex. They're struggling with more and more as they get older. In some ways we have improvements and in some ways we don't. And I think that that's probably quite typical, really, of children, to be quite honest. But we have to do what's right for them. We have to make those decisions. And the problem is it offends, like I said, and isolates us. Because we are seen as being difficult or fussy or exaggerating, leaving people out, making people feel insecure with us. And it's not something we are trying to do, but that is the outcome, I suppose, regardless. But yeah, I just think that it just needs to be discussed that there is something in between the escalations or meltdowns. And I'm not really sure what that thing is, but I know that a lot of PDA parents, especially from what I posted on my social media, sadly I did have a couple of bad comments. And like I said earlier, I think the frustration is that I know I'm not adequately describing it, but it's so hard to describe unless you've been in it. So somebody will take what I'm saying and relate it to their experience, which will be something similar, and I've no doubt of that, like a tantrum. But that really isn't what this is. It is like a panic attack. It's the only way I can explain it, really. It's probably the closest thing to it, but like a very heightened, overreactive panic attack, and there's nothing you can do. And it's, again, it's like an outward one. They're experiencing internal feelings, but it all gets aimed at you and you get attacked. I get physically attacked all the time. And people say you shouldn't use that word attacked because it's not intentional, because they're overtaken. I understand that, but it doesn't change the outcome that you can end up bleeding. And it's really sad because afterwards the children are remorseful. Sometimes it takes a long time to get there. And sometimes my youngest in particular will only focus on kind of what's been done to him. So if I've had to remove him from somebody else because he's attacking them, he will fixate on the fact that you removed him. It's that kind of thing. Or I've put him in his room and I go and sit in there with him, but he will only remember that he got put into his room. He doesn't seem to remember why, any of the factors leading up to it, what he did to other people. Eventually, he sometimes gets to that space, but sometimes he still doesn't. I do generally think he has problems identifying emotions. And he has difficulties in some situations of then, you know, thinking from the other person's point of view, which is what obviously people say about autistic people having no empathy. The thing is, I think for a four-year-old who's overcome by emotion, who's socially and emotionally not where his peers are or where he should currently be, for all of the things that he has challenges with and the fact that he is clearly a little PDA-er, you know, a mini PDA. I say mini because his dad isn't diagnosed PDA because we didn't know about it, but oh, clearly he is. And so many of the things I've described he was like as a child, but on a different scale, like different. Again, we're all different. But for a little mini PDA to be going through all of this, it's just heartbreaking. And like I said, the emphasis is always on him. And I don't think that in that moment any child or any person would be able to put themselves into somebody else's shoes. That doesn't mean they lack empathy. He can be so warm and kind and sensitive and empathetic in different situations, but we seem to judge them on the moments when they're at their most distressed. And I think I've seen a lot of people comment on this about autism in general. You're judged by the behaviour you exhibit when you are in a distressed mode, when you are in a meltdown or a shutdown. People judge you on that behaviour, but there's a reason that behaviour happens. But with my eldest, I find him a lot easier to kind of read and understand and understand the triggers and see them. My youngest is completely different, which is why I reached out for some support over him, because he just isn't even presenting like my oldest. My oldest, like I said, is you can put some detective work in and you can get some kind of logic out of it. But my youngest, it's just impulse a lot of the time. It just feels emotional, primitive, impulsive, compulsive. Anxiety, anxiety, anxiety. I can't stress that enough. And it's really sad. And then people say, well, why is he like this? What have you done to him? We've talked about this before, how he meets a lot of the criteria for children who are abused. And this is not uncommon for children who are autistic and PDA and have PDA. It's not uncommon at all from the circles that I've been in and the people I've spoken to and the research I've conducted. You know, we just need to kind of try and get to the bottom of why and what we can do to help him moving forward and us as a family. But we feel quite alone in this. And also, as we know, PDA is not fully recognised by a lot of people, and this is something that we're all trying to work on. My local authority are trying to work on it, which is brilliant, but that doesn't mean it's necessarily immediately taken on board by the professionals working in the field and wider society, and there's a lot of work to do. But at the moment, I'm feeling really misunderstood. And like I said, you can't control what people think. I'm on a public forum. I'm putting my public opinion out here. I'm not expecting everybody to agree with it. I'm not. But what I do ask of people is to not be unkind, vicious, unnecessarily abrupt, not to just attack for the sake of attacking, and maybe try and get clarification about what I might mean before you kind of attack me. I've openly admitted I'm not always the most articulate. I sound articulate, but I am autistic and I do have processing difficulties. The amount of podcasts and things I've recorded where I listen to it back and cringe because I've worded something completely wrong and I'm waiting for somebody to pounce on me for wording it wrong when it isn't quite what I meant, but of course it's come across a certain way. I can't help it. That is one of my difficulties. But I still want to put my voice out there, and I'm happy to answer any questions, and I'm happy to be challenged, and I'm happy to explain. But people don't give you that chance. And that's my last note in this ND community, is people are so quick to attack. And yet actually, I'll be honest, the people who have the most to say, I'm sorry if this is offensive, but this is the truth, actually. The people who've had the most to say are the neurodivergent adults who don't have children. I'm a neurodivergent adult. I can talk from the experience of an individual. I can speak from the experience of a teacher. I can speak from the experience of parenting. And I don't really feel you should have an opinion on parenting if you do not have children. Obviously, you can help parents understand maybe the psychology of their children. So if you're an ND adult and you want to try and help autistic children and you want to help parents understand their children, absolutely go ahead. But you can't fully criticise what a parent does, and you can't fully criticise what an ND parent does or what we're explaining and experiencing if you haven't been there. And again, some people will disagree with that, but that's my opinion. Because some of the things that even ND adults I've heard say to people is wrong. And I think, especially because I'm parenting PDA children, a lot of the things that are recommended and discussed, they're just not relevant at all. And this example with the washing was such a small one. I just experience every single day these issues where he completely loses it. And it can be literally over anything. I think I gave one another time about how every single day he asks me to put the toothpaste on his toothbrush. And then one evening, I thought, right, routine, I'll just do it. But I didn't check with him first, which is like the thing you must always do. But sometimes, again, you just overlook it, don't you? Think, right, okay, bedtime, I'll get everything ready. And that caused a massive meltdown. And it wasn't this thing in between, it was an actual meltdown. And it lasted about an hour or so. And that was just because I put toothpaste on his toothbrush. Now, he was expecting me to put it on there. But again, it's this kind of control element. I took that control away from him. He likes to tell me to do it. And again, people go, he's just trying to control you. Well, he is. He is, but he needs that to be safe and to feel in control of his world, because he is an emotional wreck inside, really. And I think that's what people don't see when he's smiling and laughing and playing. And, you know, he is constantly in need of reassurance, like I've told you, always asking if I love him, which makes me sad because I just don't feel I could kind of give any more. But I know that actually it's an internal issue and I just have to continue doing what I'm doing. And it's just a shame that I can't sometimes articulate things properly. And I cannot put into words how his behaviour is. And just to finish with this last thing, I had a family member witness a meltdown last week. And this family member has had a lot of things to say over the years. And not because they're unsupportive or unkind, they just didn't understand. And they even said to me, wow, now I've actually experienced it, I can see what you mean. But when you were just describing it and even just sending me clips, it didn't come across that way. And that's why it's really difficult to explain to people. And they even said, no one is going to get it until they're in the presence of it. So that is why I say, unless you are a PDA parent, and that might be as an individual as well, as parenting PDA, unless you have experience of PDA, I just think it's for the best that comments are not made, because what I've described might sound to somebody who hasn't experienced what I'm trying to get across, like a tantrum, and sound so contrived, and it really isn't. Luckily for me, I have had a lot of parents of PDAers and PDA individuals get in touch and explain their experience and explain, you know, as an individual, what that felt like to be like my youngest. And that has been so helpful. And if any of you are listening to this, thank you so much. You have helped me so much today at a time where I felt really low. And especially when people just feel they can turn on you. I know that as neurodivergents, we're quite abrupt. And I know we expect people to accept that we're quite blunt. But you have to kind of get all your facts before you can go in with that. And I think that's the issue I have with some people, is that go in, have an opinion, okay, but it has to be an educated or an informed one. You can't just go in, read something, misunderstand it and attack somebody over it. Get the facts, get the details. And like I said, on this particular post, I asked for people to only comment if they had experience from the parenting perspective, and not everybody did. And with the greatest of respect, I don't respect your opinion if you have not lived this. And with that, I'm going to wish you a lovely evening or a lovely day whenever you're listening to this. And I hope to speak soon, and we will have some more structured podcasts, kind of, because we never are that structured, are we? Coming your way. Take care.